things that are lucky and things that are unlucky. And for example, this Mangala Sutta is actually part of a collection of other suttas. And those suttas, one of the things that is common with them is this sense of the superstition. So there's one particular sutta where there is someone who comes up to the Buddha, and that person is actually very superstitious. And the Buddha in that sutta uses their superstition as a way to change their way of thinking in line with the Dharma. And that's actually very similar to what's happening in this Mangala Sutta as well, where the Buddha uses what may appear to be a question that could tend towards the superstitious, towards a more practical and well-rounded advice. So then in answer to what this deva has asked about, you know, the question is, whether it's devas or human beings, there's something missing, right? There's something missing. And this deva wants to know, what is indeed the highest blessing? What is it that will protect us? And this is quite telling, actually, because it also means that if you make it to the deva realm, if you make it to heaven, things aren't all perfect. That isn't the ultimate goal. And this is quite important, because if everything was all rosy up there in heaven, the deva wouldn't come down and say that the devas also need protection and the devas also need blessings. So then, how does the Buddha then answer this question about what the highest blessings are? The Buddha first starts with talking about spiritual friends, which was, of course, the theme of Bodhi Night this year. And the Buddha starts with saying that the highest blessing is this: not consorting with fools, consorting with the wise. Paying homage to those worthy of homage, this is the highest blessings. Not consorting with fools. So in our day-to-day life, we come across so many people. Yeah? In our lifetime, countless beings. And the important thing is, in our practice, in our Dharma practice, we have to be discriminate in how we want to deal, not so much how we deal with people, but who we want to keep close with us. Yeah? No matter who you meet, you may still be able to deal with them with loving kindness, with compassion. But it is also important to know who we should go for advice, right? Who we should stay away from. And that's because the people who we spend most time with, that actually shapes our lives. They can also shape our thinking. I'll give you an example. Has anyone ever been in any kind of toxic environment or toxic relationships? The office is filled with them. And I do a lot of family law matters as well, so family as well, right? The people who we want as friends, they can either steer us on the right path or they may also steer us away from the Dharma path. So in that way, we need to choose really carefully who we wish to hang around with, who we want to seek advice from, and how we want to deal with those people who we decide won't actually assist us on this Dharma path. And another example, when we decide, or if you decide, that you want to be in a relationship with someone, whether that is in a friendship or a spiritual relationship, you can make that decision about who you want to spend time with and how you would grow. So if you choose to be with someone who is from another religion, for example, or someone who doesn't support your Dharma practice, then you would be aware at the beginning of that relationship that it's not going to be just a simple relationship where you're supporting one another in the Dharma path. So the first advice is not consorting with fools and consorting with the wise. And the next is paying homage to those who are worthy of homage. So other translations talk about respect, right? Being able to respect those who deserve respect. And that, of course, also means being able to identify those people who would be worthy of your respect. And who would be worthy of your respect? Those would be people who you would see for a period of time, that you've been with them for a period of time, that they have been able to progress on the Dharma path. And you have that opportunity then to respect them and pay homage to them. And if you can surround yourself with all these good people, then indeed, isn't that a blessing? So once we have our relationships down pat, right, then the Buddha talks about a wider circle. So the Buddha then talks about living in a civilized land. Another translation of this is in a conducive environment, right? In an environment where it is free from violence, free from war, free from famine. Being able to live in a country where there is freedom, there is beauty, there is compassion, there is an ability to live without fear. That is one of the highest blessings. So if we consider our life here in Australia, would you consider this as one of our blessings? Yeah, I think so. When I was younger, I used to think, much younger, how is it that someone can be born in Australia and almost immediately their life is different to someone who is born in a country in the middle of war and famine? And how can we explain that? And that it really just determines the course of your life. So your environment is really important. And the answer to, in a Buddhist sense, why certain people are born in more fortunate states and other are born in less fortunate states, you can find that in the next sentence in this sutta, which says, having made merit in the past. Now this is interesting. If we've made merit in the past, it is a blessing that we enjoy now. And that is, of course, in relation to the law of karma, the law of cause and effect. Why we are able to enjoy all these wonderful opportunities that we currently have is because of the good karma that we've actually created in the past. Those are the meritorious deeds that we have created in the past and that we are now enjoying. So it would make sense then that that would encourage us to know that this is the most conducive time to live in and to practice and to continue creating more of these merits so that our future lives would also be good too. And then next, directing oneself rightly and with mastery. This is to talk about this is to link with the others. If you have a conducive environment for practice, if you've also done merit in the past, then you can use these positive and wholesome conditions so that you can direct yourself now with mastery, self-mastery, the ability to continue our practice, continue to do wholesome deeds. You know, it's actually a blessing, really, to be able to be generous. Because in order for us to be generous, we must have something to give, correct? And we must have that attitude that we want to give. If we don't have something, we actually can't give it. Whether that be money, or it could even be time or skill. So in those times when, like now, you are able to give, you are able to be generous, you are able to be practiced, please do. Because you just never know when the conditions may change. And if one day our conditions aren't as fortunate, then what will we do in terms of our practice? So indeed, living in a civilized land with conducive environment for practice, having the merit of the past, being able to direct ourselves in the right way, on the right path, this is the highest blessings. And then related to that, we would build on it. We would build on it by being able to not only use the environment on the outside, but also be able to build on our skill on the inside. So hence the next stanza, the Buddha continues with his advice. Broad knowledge, skill, well-mastered discipline, well-spoken words. This is the highest blessings. So with broad knowledge, this is to say, you know, nowadays, we're very specialised, aren't we? More and more, especially in our careers, in our professions, we're very specialised. And our minds actually become almost tunnelled into something. And that's okay if we want to understand something with depth. So, for example, if you want to understand the Dharma with depth, then that's what you will do. But don't do that if that will mean that you will miss out on the whole spectrum of the bigger picture. So broad knowledge relates to that. Being able to have an understanding of a number of things that are important to understanding the big picture in the Dharma practice. And having skill, having training, having expertise, because it's with that that we can actually apply it. Well-mastered discipline. The Dharma practice really, a lot of it is about restraint. It's about self-discipline. It is about effort, right effort. And so that is another quality that will be added on to this highest blessing. And the next is the well-spoken words, right speech. And when the Buddha talks about well-spoken words, he's not just talking about what we say. In other suttas, he's also spoken about how when speech must be timely, when we say it, the manner in which we say something, the tone in which we say something. All of this is important. Yeah? So, for example, if you were going to reprimand someone and tell them that what they were going to do, what they have done, wasn't skillful, if you do this in front of a whole bunch of people, in front of everyone, that may not be skillful. If you tell them straight, they may not take it and they may become very defensive. If you pull them aside and you say to them, look, that wasn't very skillful what you did, etc., etc., you know, they may take it and they may not take it. So now let me ask you, what would be a good way to say to someone that what they did was unskillful? What do you do if you wanted to pull someone aside and tell them? Or do you, or you don't? What do you do?
Asking whether they think it's right.
Asking them? Okay. Would you do that in front of everyone?
Well, probably like one.
Okay, so you pull them aside and you say, was that thing you did skillful or not?
Probably like, how do you think about the thing that you've done? Is it benefit?
Yeah. Yeah, questions usually help, eh? I mean, I do it all the time, right? So you kind of guide them there. You lead them there with questions as opposed to just telling them. Probably asking them if they think that was skillful or not probably would be a bit too blunt even. You know, sometimes you just have to go around the edges a bit. Okay, what else do people do?
Talk about what they did right first.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ajahn Brahm talks about the sandwich method. I use it all the time. So you first tell them something good about them, right, so they feel a bit good, and then you lay it into them with the criticism, and then you have to end up with something good as well, okay? Just to wrap it all up. Yeah, that often works too. Yeah. What else?
Sitting on seeing clothes.
Some romantic candles.
Asking them what the situation was like when they did that thing, so they can really understand the whole situation from different perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. And placing things in context too. Sometimes people do something which may have been unskillful in that moment, but that doesn't characterise them, right? So that's another thing that I find is quite useful too. Don't talk about the person, but talk about their actions. They'll be less defensive about it. Good. Okay. So well-spoken words. Timely words. Polite words. That's very important. And if you're able to master yourself, your conduct, your speech, your ethics, that indeed is the highest blessings. So what have we got so far? We've got our relationships, yeah, in the first stanza. In the second stanza, we've got our environment. And thirdly, we've got ourselves in terms of our own skills. Yeah? Then, with our skills, what can we do? The fourth, what we do is we can support, we have support for our for one's parents, assistance to one's wife and children, consistency in one's work. This is the highest blessings. So yes, we have the skills for ourselves to direct our life, but the ability to apply our skills for the benefit of others, especially those who are dear to us, who are close to us, that is so important. And that indeed is a blessing. You know what I mean? The Buddha did say, to repay the debt of our parents. What is it? It is so difficult, yeah? Don't think that if you pay them a bit of money from time to time, that would be enough. Allowance is not enough. No? In fact, the Buddha actually went through all these different things. But really, the greatest way to repay your parents is to repay them by teaching them meditation, by bringing them to the Dharma, by supporting them in their Dharma practice. So that indeed is the highest blessing, when we can repay with gratitude what our parents have given us. And then to support those who are with us. Here we've got wife, but you can also see this as your partner, right? So supporting your partner, supporting any children, making sure that those near to us, close to us, they're not neglected. Right, so this means, just a bit of reflection for you all, if you're running Unibuds, don't forget your family. No? Don't neglect your duties as a daughter, as a brother, as a sister, as a son. Yeah? These are duties that we must still continue to, and that goes with us hand in hand with our lay Dharma practice. Consistency in one's work. This has to do with right effort. So don't go all out and burn yourself out and then you can't support anyone anymore. Right? All those people who are very enthusiastic to help and then they help and then you may not hear from them for a long time or ever again. Yeah? Or sometimes people ask me some really interesting questions like, well, if I'm generous, I'll just give everything away and I'll have nothing, right? Well, no, you don't do that. So it's about being consistent in what we do, consistent in our giving, consistent in our compassion, consistent in our work for providing for those who are close and dear to us. And if we're able to do that, that indeed is the highest blessings. Right. Now we move on to broadening that net. So it's no longer just for those who are the most closest to us. Generosity, living with moral conduct, assistance to one's relatives, deeds that are blameless, this is the highest blessings. You will notice with these stanzas, often the first part is really expanding on the one before. It's building on it. But then it adds something extra as well for you to continue in terms of your practice. So often people talk about this sutta as different stages of your practice, right? So here we have generosity, living with moral conduct. This is essential. This is one of the foundations of the Noble Eightfold Path. You know, we've got morality, we've got mental cultivation, and we've got the wisdom aspect. The morality aspect, the moral conduct, is essential. It is the foundation of our practice. And with that, if we are able to live in that moral code, that becomes the guideline and the path for our life in the right direction. And if we continue that path, then our deeds would be blameless. There would be nothing that we would do that would make us feel that we have harmed or hurt ourselves or others. And that actually supports our practice of mental cultivation. Because if you were sitting in meditation and during the day, if there was something that you had done that you felt wasn't quite right, when you sit in meditation, very, very likely that thing will come up and it will disturb your meditation. And if it's not in your meditation, there will always be this niggling feeling. And so in Buddhism, we talk about moral shame, and moral fear. Hiri otapa is the Pali words. And that's to do with when we come to be really mindful about our conduct, really mindful about cause and effect, we become very attuned to things like that. And actually, there is this sense of wanting to live this blameless life because we have clear understanding of what will happen if we do conduct any unwholesome conduct. Because we are quite aware, in terms of cause and effect, what the results will be. So hence, here it talks about deeds that are blameless. And if we can live a blameless life, surely that is the highest blessing. Okay, and again, continuing that kind of theme in the next stanza, the Buddha talks about avoiding, abstaining from evil, refraining from intoxicants, being heedful of the qualities of the mind. This is the highest blessings. Now, does this all sound familiar? Yeah, it's like different aspects of the five precepts. Yeah. So we've got the intoxicants, which comes from the five precepts. But certainly in terms of the moral code, we have abstaining from evil, any unwholesome conduct, anything that will cause us harm, anything that will cause other people harm, such as evil. Refraining from intoxicants. Why is it important to stay away from grog? Why is it important to stay away from alcohol and drugs? Besides the fact that drugs are illegal. So, with alcohol, with any type of illicit substances, it will cloud our minds. So if we're trying to build morality as a foundation, if our mind is not clear, it's very easy for us to break that moral conduct. And likewise, if we want to build our mental cultivation, with any type of intoxicants, it will cloud our mind. And with the cultivation of wisdom, again, how can we cultivate wisdom if our minds are not sharp? If we can't penetrate through the truth because it's all hazed? And if it is addicted to some sort of stimulant, such as intoxicants. So hence, we would refrain from any intoxicants. And being heedful of the qualities of the mind. Now, this is interesting. This is taking it a bit further. Yeah? The qualities of the mind. The mind could be filled with lust, craving, desire. And if we're not careful, those qualities would consume us. And it would cause us to do things that would break the moral code. And that kind of craving, desire, it can consume us so that we will be pulled into doing something that is evil. Or the quality of the mind could be such where it is filled with hatred or ill will. And same thing. If the qualities of the mind is negative, it's prickly, then again, the actions that will follow will also be unwholesome and will be harmful. And if the qualities of the mind is one where it is confused or drowsy or bored, and if we're not mindful about that, then we can slip into heedlessness. We can slip into this haze where we're not actually present and our mind has drifted off somewhere else. So hence, by avoiding what is evil, by refraining from any intoxicants that clouds our mind, and by always being mindful and heedful of the qualities of our mind, that indeed is the highest blessings. Now here, the next stanza, we actually move into the qualities of our mind. The qualities that we can bring to our Dharma practice. Respect, humility, contentment, gratitude, hearing the Dharma on timely occasions. This is the highest blessings. This is a good way to approach our Dharma practice, these qualities. This is a good way to approach when we hear the Dharma teachings. So when you open the book to read the suttas, this is a good way to have these qualities in your heart. To be respectful, to have humility, because you can only learn if you're humble. So the beginner's mind in our Buddhist practice is really important. Contentment. Rather than reading something or listening to a talk and thinking about where it could be improved or what it's lacking, contentment, gratitude, that actually opens our mind. That opens our heart to that experience where the Dharma is being delivered, whether you're reading it or hearing a Dharma talk. And then hearing the Dharma on timely occasions is really important. If you're reading the Dharma in a time when you're feeling rushed or your mind is distracted, nothing gets in. Yeah? Or when you're reading a Dharma book, as if you're reading a textbook, you read the same sentence over and over again and it's not really seeping in. It's when you take that moment to approach the Dharma in a way where it is sacred. That's when you feel the Dharma speaking to you. That's when you can really bring it into your heart. And from there, you can bring it into your life. And then in the next stanza, we build on that again. Patience, composure, seeing contemplatives, discussing the Dharma on timely occasions. This is the highest blessings. Now, so the stanza before this, we're talking about hearing the Dharma on timely occasions. But this stanza, we're talking about discussing the Dharma on timely occasions. So first, we hear it before we discuss it. You don't talk before you listen. That's my general rule. You listen first. And then once you have an understanding about the Dharma, then you can discuss about it. And listening to the Dharma sometimes can be quite a passive process. But when you discuss about the Dharma, that's when it becomes very active. That's when you can draw on your own knowledge. And sometimes you don't even realise you understand something until you discuss it with others. And another thing that's important about discussing the Dharma, is you're able to share the Dharma with others. And you're able to use a different perspective to understand what it is that you've read or that you've understood. So as an example, my first sutta that I came across was the Heart Sutta in the Mahayana tradition. And when I read it, I thought, oh, this is amazing, right? Now when I read the Heart Sutra, I realise what I thought the Heart Sutra said was just so off, right? But because I didn't have anyone to talk to about the Heart Sutra, because I only had my perspective on what I understood about it, I was never challenged on it. And it was only when I was able to hear from other people and discuss that particular sutta with others that I was able to go, oh, okay, so that's not what I understood about it. So discussing the Dharma is important. And how we discuss it is important. Seeing contemplatives, right? Seeing the monastics. Seeing people who really practice the Dharma. Speaking to them, discussing things with them. And patience. When we are discussing the Dharma with others, it's really important that we have the patience to understand other people's perspectives and listen. And patience in our own understanding and our own development of our own Dharma practice. And composure. Don't get into fights over the Dharma. Don't have arguments over the Dharma. Stay away from those... What are those blogs? Have you seen them? You can go online and you've got community forums where people just talk about the Dharma and then it just turns into some argument. And it's all views. You can read them, but don't get caught up in all of that. Because otherwise, it's not about the Dharma. It's about views. It's about my Dharma. My Dharma is right. Yeah? And once you get into the whole my Dharma and your Dharma, you're actually missing the Dharma. So from there, you can see we are starting to move from the mundane, day-to-day level. Yeah? And the Buddha's advice is moving towards hearing the Dharma, understanding the Dharma, sharing the Dharma, discussing the Dharma, to the next stanza. Austerity, celibacy, seeing the noble truths, realizing nibbana, this is the highest blessings. This is the supreme attainment. This is where we will, in our Dharma practice, if you continue with this path that the Buddha is setting down, can you see how you're moving from the mundane level, yeah, into more about the austerity, the actual practice, celibacy, seeing the noble truths, referring to the Four Noble Truths, really understanding dukkha, really understanding the cause of dukkha, really understanding nibbana and the way to nibbana, and finally, realizing nibbana. And this is the highest blessing. And then from there, a mind that, when touched by the ways of the world, is unshaken, sorrowless, dustless, at rest, this is the highest blessings. The ways of the world. You know, it's often talked about the Buddha, him living in the world, but he's not actually touched by the world in the ways that others would be. And we talk about the eight worldly winds in Buddhism, right? And the ways that the world comes into our life, the ways that we are pulled this way and that. Whenever we have something, if you get something that you like, what do you do with that? You either want more of it or you want to hold on to it. But then when it's taken away from you, what happens? We are pulled, aren't we? We are hurting. So when there is gain, we are hurting. When there is loss, we are hurting. When we have something, if you observe it next time, if you have something and you're not careful about the attachment that has grown to that thing, even when you have that thing, there is suffering. There is tension. There is angst. There is angst that this thing will go or this thing will change. So if you're not careful, then you will fall into the gain and loss and be pulled this way and that. Similarly so, if someone says something nice about you, praise, you can actually observe your ego coming out and wanting it and grabbing onto it. You can feel a difference in your mind, in your ego. So when there is praise, observe what happens. When there is blame, you know your ego plummets and it hurts. So praise and blame, if we're not careful, we also get lost in that too. Pleasure and pain. When we have pleasure, again, there is grasping. There is wanting. There is wanting more and more of it. And when there is pain, there is hurting, there is suffering, and we don't want it. So again, our minds, they're constantly being moved one way or that. Yeah. What have we got? Pain. And how do we ensure that we won't actually fall into these traps? How do we know that we're not going to be falling into just grasping and pushing away? The key here is equanimity. And this is what the Buddha is talking about when he talks about the unshaken, the sorrowless, the dustless, and at rest. The mind is at rest. It doesn't swing all the time, this way and that. But we can, it's slowly, without going to the left and the right all the time, it can rest in the middle. And that is an analogy used for equanimity, where the mind is unshaken by the world outside. And if our mind reaches that equanimity, indeed, that is the highest blessings. And then finally, the culmination of all of this, those who have fulfilled the conditions for such blessings are victorious everywhere and attain happiness everywhere. To them, these are the highest blessings. So that's a really nice summary. If we have all of these things, then no matter where we are, no matter where we go, whether we are here or indeed whether we are in heaven, if we have these conditions fulfilled, then no matter where we go, there will be happiness. And that indeed is the highest blessing. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the Mangala Sutta. And I hope that what we'll do in the next section, is to reflect on these. Because this is not just the Buddha giving this advice to a deva. He may as well be sitting here and giving this same sutta to us now, in the 20th century, over 2,500 years after he's passed away. It still makes complete sense. If these conditions are fulfilled, then our life would be one where we can reach the highest and most supreme attainment. So what I'm going to ask you to do is break into two groups, right? And using this sutta as the basis, starting from the first one, this is an exercise actually in reflection and gratitude. Because very often we don't take advantage of the wholesome conditions that we have in our life. And we don't realise just how fortunate we are. So the two parts of the exercise is this. In a group, have a sharing session about the things in each stanza that you would have. And then also discuss how we can use these wholesome conditions to really reach the highest blessings, to ultimate nirvana. Yeah? Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Let's split in half. Well, you guys are pretty small, so you probably have to go this way. Maybe just in a circle. Yeah, two groups. Someone to have a gratitude journal, to keep a gratitude journal in the morning or in the evening. You can actually write in a journal about all the things that you're grateful for. And if you've got most of these things happening, then it should spur you on into the next stanza, which develops your Dharma practice, and hence the second question. Really drawing out all the wholesome conditions that you have in your life that will spur you to Nirvana. Yes. It's not my fault. He asked me to talk about spiritual
Okay. We can discuss like this.
Yeah. But just consulting.
Yes, we do. Do you have any idea about the question?
Let's start with the model concept.
So how do you avoid falling?
Consulting.
Consulting through time, the third one.
Consulting time is when you
pain respect. Where do you make the homage to the body? We're trying to answer the question
what teacher.
Like, have we got
your friends who guide you?
Okay.
You don't need to
guide them,
but you but yeah, we're answering the question, but we should know what you have in mind. If you're very interested, you kind of, well.
Diligent.
Is that right? Also, that is
in order to be well mastered as well.
Yeah, probably my own.
Yeah, but also skillful.
That's very attractive, but you're being...
So is that something
that
you
we talked about this.
Yeah.
So hopefully you practice that.
But most of us, like, sometimes we also have this kind of what do we mean? But this is this considered
like directing
but then
we
know it's
famous.
Oh,
wait,
for one's turn.
Master discipline, isn't it?
Easy or eager feeling in that
has already
something
you like discipline.
Why don't you have to shake this or anything?
Let's copy out without asking. Discipline is okay. No, some people can't focus on anything.
To some extent.
You were born with that skill, is it? Keep on telling you how many out of 38 we get.
Okay.
So 38 blessings.
Wait, do we count the half
metal? I think it's a little bit different.
It's not
following very strict schedule. It's more like being aware and then reminding yourself.
Practicing coming to Dharma talk. How rare is that? All the billions of people who love
it. All the billions of ants.
It's self-discipline. The ability to show restraint. To be able to guide our culture. The law about self-restraint. The next dance about supporting one's dreams.
Yes, we're all in a degree.
But how do you interpret that broad knowledge?
I'm thinking.
Is broad knowledge considered like wisdom? We're talking about wisdom.
It took me a very, very long time.
You can be very smart.
Parents don't want to hear the question. So that won't work, right? They're used to telling you what's right, not the other way around. But I find that why I say it takes a long time is because it's actually through ourselves. It's through ourselves and our conduct. And if they see that we're happier, and they see that we're nicer, we're calmer, we treat them differently,
then
we become more interested. What's causing this change? And that's happened to me, but also other people that I've seen.
Exactly.
I actually think I was in one of the conferences today. It's always very interesting because when I go to those events, I realise just how many people listen actually.
Because the Muslims and the Christians and all of them, they can get that kind of like, okay, we're like, what's fine? And they see Buddha as just Asian. They do. They try and put Buddha into that. But we're actually all, you know, we're all together in all of this. But it's very superficial in terms of what we can say is common speech and
language.
It is so different from all the other religions. So different. You can talk about the moral conduct and moral code of being something, sure. But there's a lot more depth to it.
Tradition, following the old rules.
It's like part of the human.
Discussion useful. So you know how we're just talking about hearing the Dharma and discussing the Dharma, right? So when we discuss, whether it's with our friends or even with ourselves, when we have these reflections, after you read a sutta, it's not just about reading it and then putting it away, but really reflecting on it and applying it to our own lives. And applying it in a way where we can reflect and draw inspiration from it. So both groups have said that a lot of these items you've already started to do, a lot of these things you already have in your life. So we are indeed very fortunate, and we have a lot of these blessings already. And hopefully that will inspire you to continue this practice towards the supreme attainment. Because if we follow through with this, then the Buddha actually sets it out. But what is at the end is nibbana, equanimity. That balanced state of mind. Now, are there any questions? Do you like this sutta? You can understand why the Theravada, especially the Burmese, they really, really enjoy this sutta. Yeah? Because it sets out from the mundane lay practice all the way to the monastic practice as well. Well, thank you everyone, and thanks for participating in this discussion. Hope it's useful. And do try that gratitude diary. It's really awesome. So you, in the morning when you wake up, or in the evening, you can reflect on all the things that you're grateful about. And that's a nice way for you to start the day or to end the day. Okay? And with that, I'll end my talk.